Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. I am Steve Dale. Welcome to the program. You know, today is a holiday. You may have noticed that. It is July 4th, and what a beautiful day in Chicago. And I thought, let's talk to someone who might be able to tell me what July 4th was like back in 1776. And I have found the perfect person to do that. Of course, Paul Lisnick could have told me because he was around in 1776. But beside that, I've got him on the phone now, Seth David Radwell, who wrote this book. It's a mouthful. July 4th, American Schism, How the Two Enlightenments Hold the Secret to Healing Our Nation. I'll say it again. Next time I'll say it much better than that. I apologize. Seth, welcome to WGN.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, it's good to talk to you. So I think I'll start here. If we can go back, and I'm sure you do have handy, because you should, a time machine.
Yes.
And we can go back in time to 1776. What was life generally like back then?
Well, it was the height of the what we now call the spirit of 76, the revolutionary period. And the colonists were increasingly concerned about what they perceived as onerous taxation and regulation by the British crown. And as such, it was, you know, very important for the really became the founding of our country, that particular era. And it was one of revolutionary spirit overall.
What was life like for the, and I want to talk more about that, but what was life like for the average citizens, you know, your average family, husband, wife? What did most husbands and wives do, and their kids? What was it like?
Well, it was very much kind of an agrarian economy and a merchant economy. And I guess the average person was concerned because the colonial leaders, who they had some confidence in because peace, you know, things in the colonies had been going along pretty well in the recent years, except for this British control, so to speak. So they had confidence in their local leadership. But at the same time, they were very trepidatious because here you had leaders telling them they needed to break away from the crown, but they had no sense of what was going to be in its place. You know, famously in the 1750s, Benjamin Franklin's woodcut, join free or die, really was like this message that they needed to unify as a group of colonies in order to fend off the power of the British. And so there was a lot of spirit around that. I probably should also mention that Thomas Paine's pamphlet, which was published at the beginning of 76, Common Sense, had become a sensation. So many people who were educated enough to read the news read Thomas Paine's pamphlet.
How did people get, I presume there wasn't, social media wasn't big back then. So how did people get their news? Was it by Paul Revere riding on a horseback and telling them things?
Well, not quite. Thankfully, because since the inventing of the Benjamin Franklin was a printer, so there were printers throughout the colonies, and printers published what they called pamphlets, which are in essence opinion pieces by leaders. In fact, many of them at the time were published anonymously for various reasons. Either the authors were fearful of retribution from the crown if they said nasty things, or they felt that the author wanted to hide behind a pseudonym. Thomas Paine's piece was fascinating because, you know, it really spoke to the needs of the common people of the day. So while at various conventions you had very, very well-known leaders like John Adams in Boston and Samuel Adams and John Hancock and the young Thomas Jefferson from Virginia, these were very educated people. They were somewhat aristocratic elites, and they were discussing revolution and whether they should break away in a crowded room. But it was Thomas Paine's words that got to the average citizen of the colonies at that time and convinced them that the colonists should not have to put up with the type of provisions and the standing armies that the crown were promulgating throughout the colonies.
You know, what's interesting is that all those other names you mentioned, people know today, obviously, who Thomas Jefferson and Samuel Adams and all of the people know those names. Thomas Paine, his name hasn't held up through time. Who was the dude?
Right. That is a great question, Steve, and it goes to the heart of American Schism. I mean, in essence, what I try to do in American Schism is understand the divisions in America today by going back and doing an investigative tracing of the roots of those divisions back to our founding. And so, to your point, Thomas Paine is not nearly as well known today, although he was extremely influential in the revolutionary period we're discussing as one of the quote-unquote radicals, along with Benjamin Franklin. And the book talks about two enlightenments. So what does that mean? Well, it means that there were two different schools of enlightenment thought that were influencing the birth of our nation. And one was more of kind of what I call the moderate enlightenment in the book. It was influencing John Adams and Alexander Hamilton and other founders who very much were aristocratic elites. But the other one was more radical in that it provided for the notion of a representative democracy, a more egalitarian society. And that's the one that Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Paine, and Thomas Jefferson promoted. So there was this conflict, if you will. And the reason why I think it's so interesting for your listeners is that these conflicts that happened back in the 18th century are actually at the root of what's going on in America today and why one of the reasons we're so divided.
And that's what your book really is all about. So when you're turning on Name the News Network, it doesn't matter, or any radio station, and you hear an expert, or the commentator at least, say, America's never been so divided, or public officials say that, a senator, a member of the House of Representatives, do you cringe and say, yeah, we have been?
Yes, I do, because the truth of the matter is, the political divisions we observe nowadays are not new. Our country has always been, has frequently been divided, and very divided since our founding. And over the different eras across 200 years, we've always had divergent views on how the U.S. should be run. But there is one important caveat, Steve, which is that today we have a level of denial of objective truth that's threatening our democracy. So if we reject the notion of facts and objective truth altogether, democracy as a form of government is doomed. So I think whatever your political beliefs, you know, what the book that American Schism discusses, it's that it is important to make sure that views are grounded in reason and objective and empirical observation. These, in fact, are our inheritances from the Enlightenment. And I believe that one of the differences today is that while there's always been a mix of passion and reason in debate, today, to a large degree, a lot of our objective rationality in debate has been crowded out by rancor, acrimony, and division that's emotional and passion-driven and not really based on facts and argument. And that's a danger.
I want to pick that up in a second. I have a text here, 312-981-7200. Texter wants to know, and it's a bit off-topic, but it's not. Was Hamilton real? I suppose they're referring to the play. So everything you saw in that play, was that fact or fiction? I believe that's the question.
Well, Hamilton not only was real, he was a genius, but he in the founding of our nation, what you don't get so much from the play, but you certainly do get from Turnow's biography of Hamilton, is the divisions between Hamilton and the other revolutionaries, the founders. Hamilton had a very strong view of a competent and strong federal government that had powers of taxation and raising an army. And these were all important for practical concerns because the nation was young and needed a direction. But many people opposed that vision, especially the what ended up becoming the Republican Party. So Hamilton was part of the Federalists. And the division between the Federalists and the Jefferson's Republicans was, in fact, one of the first major political divisions in the young nation in Washington's cabinet, which is somewhat discussed in the play, but is I think, much more richly addressed when understood in the context of history, which is what American Schism, the book, tries to do. I think Hamilton was, to answer your listener, though, and I appreciate the question, Hamilton was very real. He was born in from humble beginnings, but he was a genius. He was extremely talented, and he was very well educated, and was a great. He was able to pen amazing solutions to problems. Great problem solver.
And one other thing, he could sing and he could rap. Clearly.
Exactly.
Well, we're talking exactly. we're talking with Seth David Radwell. The name of the book is July 4th, American Schism: How the Two Enlightenments Hold the Secret to Healing Our Nation. And I want to pick up on something that you said after the commercial break here that really, really concerned me about what you democracy still could end if this happens or continues to happen, and that is us not paying attention to the truth, and that may get back to social media. I was kidding about social media before, but maybe that's part of the big problem. We'll hear what you have to say about that when we come back. Yeah, on WGN. Yeah. So we were picking up on this topic, or I'd like to pick up on this topic, and that is something that you said earlier that's kind of scary, that our democracy really might be a concern here. I mean, that if we continue to, and I don't want to, I'll let you say the words because they're your words, but if we continue to support misinformation, then we could be doomed.
Yes, it's true, Steve, that, you know, as I mentioned before the break, our democracy has always thrived on divergent views. And that's an important part of our discussion. It's led to great solutions and compromise, but practical solutions that have allowed us as a nation to thrive. But if we reject truth, objective truth altogether, if we really believe there's no such thing as truth, it's democracy as a form of government cannot survive. And what I would say is that, you know, what you hear often on social media and on some other forms of media is this extremes on the right and left, which my research shows that over 77% of Americans, what I call the exhausted majority, don't like, are very frustrated by these extreme views on the left and right, and recognize that, in fact, we have more in common as Americans than tears us apart. And what American Schism, the book, does is it tries to chart out what is a better way to have a much more productive dialogue that rejects some of the craziness that we see today. And so, yes, I think many people have written about the fact that democracy requires the embracing rationality and objective truth.
Do we need Walter Cronkite back?
Well, it's very interesting because there really is a difference between facts and interpretation of the facts, and both are important. But if we can't agree on what the facts are, as you're seeing today frequently in our society, this notion that there is no such thing as truth, we're going to really have trouble, as we saw on January 6th, and as we're seeing it play out in other elements of society. What American Schism, the book, tries to do is explain through our history first, but then coming back to today, why there is a better way of going forward.
So do you think, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, no, you got it.
Okay. So do you think there's a yearning, a hunger, I do, for Walter Cronkite, of course, can't come back, but News Nation is here. So what this network effectively, I think, tries to do is, all right, we're not going to be at the left all the way over there. We're not going to be at the right all the way over there. We're just going to report the news. Is that, you think that's what people are hungry for?
Yes, that is what my research shows. That is part of the solution, what you're doing on your show. In fact, the way I frame it is that we have to fight unreason with reason by rejecting this debate. The way I describe it in American Schism, Steve, is that, you know, the notion of this shouting of the kind of endorphin rush we get by being affirmed by our in-groups and attacking our out-groups is fine for the sports arena. It's serving primitive emotional needs, but it's not a way to conduct public policy. And in fact, you know, I think what's happened is Americans need to break out of two time bubbles, which I describe to some degree in the book. The first bubble is their partisan bubble, based on only hearing potentially, you know, news from the left or the right. They have to get other points of view. And the second thing is to break out of their time bubble by understanding that the problems and woes and issues we face today are not new. We face them over the course of our history, and examining that history is important in coming up with solutions for today.
So what do we learn, and what does American Schism say that we can learn from our history to get out of the place where we are today? And I like your sports metaphor, except it's not exactly right. So a couple nights ago, I go out near Wrigley Field, nonetheless, and I'm wearing a Cubs shirt and a Cubs baseball cap, just like I am right now, actually. And my brother-in-law is wearing he just came from the White Sox game, a White Sox cap and a White Sox shirt. We actually get along. There are times now where, really, families are being split apart because of political views. I don't think families are actually split apart, really, because one is in New York City a Mets fan and the other is a Yankees fan, or one is a basketball fan and the other's a baseball fan.
Right. So I think your question is a really good one. And the way I describe it is this: we're so caught up in these divisions of today that we're losing sight of a larger perspective. And here's the way I frame the larger perspective. You know, 200 years ago, life expectancy in the world was 31 years. Now it's over 70 years. 200 years ago, one in five children born did not survive to age five. Today, almost all do. 200 years ago, four-fifths of the world was living in poverty. Today, one-fifth of the world is. So the progress over the last 200 years for human flourishing has been enormous. We lose sight of it because we listen to the news and we think everything's going to hell in a handbasket. We have global warming, climate change, pandemics, etc. And it's true, we have real problems. But in the grand scheme of things, we've had more progress based on enlightened thinking, even though the term enlightenment, of course, is out of favor today. But that modern society that's based on empirical observation and science has created more prosperity in the last 200 years than we had in the prior 2000. So it's not a bad track record. And if we keep focusing on rejecting that form of thinking, that empirical observation and reason, we're risking a real negative consequence. So I think we better get pretty serious as Americans and realize, yes, we have differences, and that's fine. But we have to continue on our path of prosperity and problem solving. And that requires compromise, and it requires not always getting your way. And I think that's something that we as public policy makers need to forge. And that's going to require both top-down leadership, but also bottom-up thinking, which is what my book is encouraging readers to do.
Well put. I think we'll leave it there. But bipartisan. What does that word even mean anymore? People don't know. They don't hear that. And we need to begin hearing that. Totally get what you're saying, Seth David Radwell. Check this out, American Schism, How the Two Enlightenments Hold the Secret to Healing Our Nation. Thank you so much for joining us on WGN. And probably at some point in time, you are very smart. I learned from you. I will talk to you again.
I would love to be back. Thank you so much.
Thank you.